Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking with a deaf-blind attorney who works in the area of disability rights advocacy.
We'll speak with Habin Girma about what that includes and about some of her major cases settled either through negotiation or by initiating a class action suit. We'll also learn how she got into this field and how she does her work. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Habin Girma.
One tip that I would give to anyone is try to learn as much as you can. And for the blind community, that means developing all the skills and tools you can. So learning Braille, learning technology, taking risks and learning new talents, new skills. I'm always trying to learn new things.
And that's a great tip for anybody. You know, things are changing very quickly in the world these days. Technology marches on and you never know what we're doing today is very different than what we'll be doing tomorrow. And particularly as a visually impaired person, it's important to keep abreast of technology and changes that may help you do your job or just make it easier for you to have more fun.
Well, and also keeping abreast of what changes there may be in the law or in standard practices. And many of the cases that Habin will discuss later in this program are cases due to which new things are possible or even legal for people with disabilities. And so it's important to keep track of that so that you know what kind of response you might expect when you ask for some sort of accommodation.
What it comes down to is life is a long-term learning experience.
Let's start by meeting Habin Girma.
Habin, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name is Habin Girma. I'm a Scannon Fellowship Attorney at Disability Rights Advocates. And Disability Rights Advocates, DRA, is a nonprofit legal center based in Berkeley, California, but also with offices in New York City. And I work to remove access barriers facing people with disabilities across the country.
We mentioned in the introduction that Habin is both blind and deaf. The ticking you may have heard at the beginning of her response was her friend Gordon, who transcribed all of our questions for her, but we've deleted the rest of that. So we're going to spend most of this session talking about your disability rights advocacy work. But before we get there, most of our audience and guests are blind, but you are also deaf. Can you describe your impairments?
So I use the term deaf-blind for myself. I have limited vision and limited hearing, and it's kind of tricky to describe it. I can see print that's very, very large, but Braille is my preferred reading method. Speech, I can hear some speech sounds and maybe catch 4 out of 10 words, but it's stressful to try to strain to listen. So instead of relying on my limited hearing, I use an alternative communication method by pairing a QWERTY keyboard to a Braille display. And so I have individuals and communication assistants type on a QWERTY keyboard while I read in Braille.
What other technologies do you personally rely on?
On computers, I use a Mac and I use VoiceOver, and I also use an iPhone with VoiceOver. So BrailleNote, Mac, iPhone. I also use a guide dog from the Seeing Eye, and also a cane on occasion.
Do you use any CCTVs or magnifiers or hearing aids, or are those not useful for you?
I occasionally use a CCTV, not that often. I don't use hearing aids because hearing aids have not been able to help me up to this point. In my experience, it seems like the market is designed for the majority type of hearing loss, which is high frequency hearing loss. And the opposite is very rare. So hearing aids that assist my type of hearing loss don't seem to exist right now.
But your speech is excellent, so you must have been a little older when you lost your hearing?
It's really interesting. I actually have pretty good high-frequency hearing and terrible low-frequency hearing. So I speak in a higher range that I hear well, so I'm able to hear myself, and that's why I speak clearly.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, most people with hearing loss have the opposite kind of hearing loss. Most people have trouble hearing high-frequency sounds. I have the opposite, where high-frequency is fine, but I struggle with low-frequency noise.
And I guess having the feedback enables you to make your speech output very clear.
Right, exactly. So when you're able to hear your own voice, you're getting feedback on whether you're pronouncing things correctly. I think a lot of people with hearing loss, because they miss the high frequencies, they struggle with consonants. Consonants tend to be high frequencies, and vowels tend to be low frequencies. And if you can't hear when you're making the K or the S or the P sound, you struggle to make it. And that's part of the reason there are deaf accents.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is disability rights advocacy.
So we mostly wanted to talk about your disability rights advocacy work today. And first we thought we'd ask you, what disability rights advocacy means to you?
What does disability rights advocacy mean to me? That's such a good question. It means a lot of different things. On the one hand, it means educating the community, programmers, teachers, other lawyers, about what it means to create a more accessible community. So education is a big part of it. I speak at a lot of workshops around the country and some internationally to try to teach people what they can do to make a more inclusive community. Another part of disability rights advocacy is helping individuals who have been denied equal access to gain that equal access, whether it's through writing a letter on their behalf, explaining their situation in more clear terms, and negotiating with an entity that formerly was not providing services, or it could mean litigation and filing a lawsuit to compel an institution to provide accommodations or to remove access barriers, whether online or on sidewalks, all sorts of different access issues.
What would be an example of the kind of work you do?
Disability rights advocates recently had a case in California where we filed a lawsuit against the County of Alameda to ensure that voting machines are accessible to blind users who need voting machines with text-to-speech capabilities. So that's one example of the kind of work that I do through disability rights advocates.
We did a show a couple of years ago when New York State had just implemented universally accessible voting machines, and that was show number 1144. And we'll have links to that show and its show notes in the show notes for this show. On your website, it says you do a lot of class action suits. Can you describe how those differ from a personal lawsuit?
Class actions are on behalf of a group of people. So say all blind individuals who need screen readers, or all blind individuals who rely on guide dogs. And class actions have the potential to change things and make things better for a large number of people. A personal lawsuit might make changes for just one individual, and sometimes changing things for one individual actually also has a large impact that makes things easier for everyone across the country. DRA, Disability Rights Advocates, does high impact litigation. A lot of it is class actions, but sometimes it's also on behalf of a blindness organization like National Federation of the Blind, American Council of the Blind, National Association of the Deaf, and through that is able to remove access barriers on a large scale and empower a large group of people.
And how did you get involved in this work yourself?
So when I was in college, I was thinking about what I could do to make the world a better place and to help people. And a lot of people told me that I should go into law and that a law degree gives you the flexibility of helping people in a variety of different ways, whether it's through international nonprofit work or teaching and using a law degree to teach various aspects of civil rights. So I went into law and I wanted to be a disability rights lawyer. And I heard about disability rights advocates and the work they do. So I applied for a fellowship there. And last year I started there. I started my 2-year Skadden fellowship, and I'm now just starting my 2nd year.
Haben gave a TED Talk earlier in 2014 in which she gives a slightly longer and also more humorous version of how she got into doing disability rights advocacy. Let's just say a slice of chocolate cake figures prominently in the description, but we will have a link to her TED Talk, which comes along with a transcription, also in the show notes for this show.
Can you give us another example of the type of advocacy work you do?
One of my biggest interests is technology and education. And right now, we have a lawsuit against Scribd, spelled S-C-R-I-B-D. They're an online digital library with over 40 million titles, and they have a reading subscription service. So you pay $8.99 a month and get unlimited access to the ebooks and articles on Scribd. Unless you're blind, because right now they don't have screen reader access for a lot of the material on Scribd. So on behalf of the National Federation of the Blind and a blind mother in Vermont, Disability Rights Advocates and BGL have brought this case to help increase access to Scribd for blind readers. Specifically, seeking to have Scribd program their website and mobile applications so that they're compatible with screen readers like JAWS and VoiceOver.
So we've talked with some other disability rights advocates, and they have mentioned that often before things go to a legal setting, companies or organizations will wind up negotiating somehow and fixing the problems.
Ideally, yes, companies will negotiate and be reasonable, but that's not always the case, unfortunately. And in this instance, we contacted Scribd, and the National Federation of the Blind, NFB, explained the situation, the access barriers, the lack of access for screen readers, and received no response. Scribd ignored the NFB. So litigation is sort of a last resort. If you try raising complaints internally, if you try sending a letter, a friendly letter from an attorney, and still get no response, what else can you do?
Sometimes you have no choice.
There's always a choice. There's the choice of staying home and accepting the lack of access. But in this case, reading is absolutely important. And Scribd is a service that has the potential to significantly increase the access to books and articles for the blind community. So NFB and the plaintiff, Heidi, chose in this case to take action. And I'm thrilled to be a part of this and make history in terms of making the internet and online businesses more accessible to the blind community.
I know you've only been with disability rights advocates for a little over a year, but what are some of the other major cases that you've worked on that would be of special interest to our blind audience?
So one of my projects, just a little before I arrived at DRA, UC Berkeley and DRA, on behalf of students with disabilities at UC Berkeley, reached a settlement agreement to have UC Berkeley produce print materials in alternative formats within specified time ranges. It used to be that the university was taking a really, really long time to get materials in digital format or Braille for students with disabilities. So students brought these complaints to DRA, and DRA reached this settlement agreement with UC Berkeley. So one of my responsibilities is to monitor the settlement and check reports from the university to ensure that they're complying with the settlement agreement and making sure that students are gaining access to print materials. Another case that would be of interest to the blind community is a case in the Los Angeles region. Taxi companies in the Los Angeles region are using point-of-sale touchscreen terminals to provide sighted riders ride information, payment services, and there's no text-to-speech feature, so blind riders are not able to independently pay for their rides. So we brought this lawsuit against the taxi companies and the operator of the point-of-sale terminals called RideCharge to have them install text-to-speech capabilities on these touchscreen terminals.
Is that system actually working now?
No, not yet. We filed this case in April, so it's still somewhat in the early stages.
So I'm wondering, do you know how difficult it is to install text-to-speech?
It really depends on the company and the device. It's different for every company, but we've seen taxi companies already installing text-to-speech on their terminals, and other places have done it too. And another case that DRA did involves Redbox DVD rental kiosks, and Redbox agreed to have their Redbox kiosks modified so that they offer text-to-speech capabilities. So it's been done on kiosks and terminals, and we think the taxi companies in Los Angeles could reasonably do the same thing.
There must be a trade-off sometimes in terms of the cost that the company or organization needs to incur versus the solution they come up with. How has this all worked out?
So the way the Americans with Disabilities Act frames it is that places of public accommodations need to provide reasonable accommodations so long as it's reasonable, so long it's not a financial undue burden. So it really depends on the resources of the company. So we look at the resources. Is this a company that can afford to make the changes? How expensive are the changes? It's determined on a case-by-case basis.
So that word reasonable is a negotiation.
Reasonable is a term that differs for every entity. So something that's reasonable in one situation might not be reasonable in another situation. And it's hard to say without looking at the actual company and the actual accommodations being requested. But I would love to go in always with the assumption that, yes, it is reasonable until shown otherwise.
Well, as long as you're willing to discuss with the company and let them prove one way or the other, or have them believe what, you know, you're saying to them, you should probably arrive at a reasonable solution, I would guess.
Yes, we're always telling companies that they need to arrive at a reasonable solution. And we only take on cases we feel the accommodations that we're seeking are reasonable. So we investigate companies at the beginning, seeing what we can learn from public information, from Google. And if we get the sense that this is a company that has the resources to provide the services, then we send them a letter and give them an opportunity to engage in negotiations and to explain themselves and to fix the situation on their own. And sometimes they do. And that's great. It's refreshing, rewarding when companies take the initiative to resolve access issues on their own.
Well, I guess we should really be grateful that Haben and her organization are around and doing the hard work that is making many of these services accessible to the visually impaired and people with other disabilities. That's great work that they do for all of our benefits.
Earlier this year, we did a related episode of Eyes on Success in which we spoke with Lainey Feingold about her work on what she calls structured negotiations for better access to information, in which she does some of the same things that Haben's been describing. But the details, obviously, are slightly different, and we will have a link to that show in these show notes as well, if you're really interested in the topic of disability rights advocacy and for the earlier show in particular for access to information.
And if you're unable to hear that show, there is also a transcript available in the show notes for that episode.
And we will have a transcript for this show available as well. Now for this week's final item, the impact of technology on access for people with disabilities.
Some of these new technologies must be making it a lot easier to make accommodations. Can you speak a little bit about the impact of new technologies?
By technologies, do you mean websites?
Well, I guess websites, hardware, software.
Screen readers, text-to-speech engines, magnifiers.
If you look at the area of books and reading, making books accessible to blind individuals has become much easier with technology. So, for example, Script has digital copies of books and receives digital copies of books with machine-readable text from publishers. That's how they operate. And it's sort of like a Netflix for books, where entities and users can upload their documents. Allowing blind individuals to connect to that information through screen readers is much, much easier and more affordable than, say, taking a traditional hard copy paper book and scanning it or manually typing that on a Braille reader. So technology has made access much easier and faster.
I can't imagine how they prevent their books from being accessed with a screen reader. It just seems like a digital book ought to be readable by a screen reader.
I absolutely agree. Digital books are originally created with machine-readable text, so it's very strange that blind readers using screen readers are not able to access the books on Script. It's very strange and unfortunate. It's an unnecessary barrier.
We have listeners all across the United States, but also across the world. If somebody is not in an area where you said your organization is able to help them, how would they find somebody to help them with disability rights advocacy?
I would still recommend that they contact us, and we can help connect them to individuals in their area. So, say, someone in China. If they contact me, I can help locate disability rights advocates in China. And I actually spent a week giving lectures in Beijing last year. So I do have some connections in Beijing and would be able to help someone in China locate a local advocate who could assist them.
That's great. How would somebody contact you?
They could call our office or email me. I'm very happy to answer questions regarding disability rights for people here and people across the world. My name is Haben Girma, and you can email me at hgirma@dralegal.org. Phone number is 510-665-8644. I also have a website, and that's habengirma.com. My name is spelled HABENGIRMA. And Disability Rights Advocates website is DRALEGAL.org.
And as usual, we'll have all of that contact information as well as links to the shows that we referenced earlier in this episode in the show notes associated with this show. Also, we wanted to thank Haben for sharing her time with us and also thank Gordon for transcribing our questions into Braille so we could do this interview over Skype with Haben.
In addition to all of the contact information in this week's show notes, we will also have a link to Haben's TED Talk, complete with a transcript, and to the website at which she was awarded the White House Champion of Change Award. And you can find links to lots more news stories and interviews with Haben if you go to her personal website that she already gave at www.habengirma.com. That's it for show number 1447. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about tablet comparisons for low vision users. There are many varieties of tablet devices, and selecting the right one for the needs of a low vision person using magnification and/or color control can be difficult. We'll speak with Robbie Sandberg of the Information Pool for Computer Technology Aimed at Blind and Partially Sighted People, whose German acronym is INCOBS, about their test results that can help you choose the right one for you. And the following week, we'll continue the conversation with Robbie about similar tests they've done for tablets for blind users using speech output. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333 and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.